He reached out to me and to countless others, inspiring so many of us to study, teach, and do science. Science is a cooperative enterprise spanning the generations. It's the passing of a torch from teacher to student to teacher, a community of minds reaching back to antiquity and forward to the stars. Now, come with me. Our journey is just beginning.
Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson's face-to-face encounter with his idol Carl Sagan was a day and a moment in cosmic time, he might say, that he has never forgotten. He recounted that story in the premiere of the new Cosmos series last night, a TV event carrying forward Carl Sagan's mission in his 1980 show Cosmos to a New Generation. And that's part of what scientists do, inspire and teach.
Hello, my name is Ann Cummings, and I'm calling from Greenbrae, California. My father became a theoretical physicist when he met an inspirational teacher. He would tell me, you have to learn the boring stuff, but it gets better. When I graduated from Berkeley with a degree in biophysics and English, it was a conversation with my father about doing something in the real world of day-to-day life that prompted me to apply to medical school.
So many stories from you about who got you into science. Nearly every scientist has such a story. Father, mother, teacher, mentor, and so it goes for our next three guests. From dabbling in other very different fields, each one of them was encouraged to make a deeper dive into science. Former actor Alex Tichy, now a student at Hunter College and an astrophysics intern at the American Museum of Natural History. Former radio DJ Emily Rice, now a professor of astrophysics at the College of Staten Island and CUNY Graduate Center. And we begin with former music major Seth Redfield, who is now a professor of astronomy at Wesleyan University.
What really got in my bones, actually, was seeing the night sky for the first time. So I grew up in Nebraska. We have spectacular dark skies. And I can remember just being inspired just by looking at the Milky Way in all its glory. Throughout my education, I mean, from elementary school to high school, as an undergraduate, I would meet people who were doing natural sciences or astronomy, and they could convey that sense of wonder and discovery that I felt as a kid looking at the night sky.
Is there anyone in particular who convinced you that, Seth, hey, join the club, you can do this?
I was actually a double music astrophysics major, and I was struggling with music versus astronomy, and I went on my first summer research program. I went to Tucson, Arizona, where there's a lot of astronomy done, and I worked with someone named Charlie Lindsay, and I was just fascinated by him and his colleagues, that they could live their life working on these amazing problems, and that's what they spent their day on.
So, Emily Rice, who pulled you out of the radio DJ studio and got you into astrophysics?
The great thing is that actually there wasn't any one single person, and there wasn't any one single experience or anything like that. It was just a lot of kind of wandering, and one of my favorite stories to tell is that I was deciding between three majors in college, kind of like Seth.
What were they?
They were physics and astronomy, German and English literature. And the professor that I had had the most experience with was actually an English literature professor. And I went to him during his office hours and said, you know, look, I can't finish all three of these majors in 4 years. What do you think I should do? And my English literature professor said, forget about lit. Like, he said, quote unquote, he said, you can always read books. And if you give up the physics or if you give up the German, it's not, you're not going to be able to go back to it as easily.
What a great piece of advice.
Little did he know, I don't have a lot of time to read books anymore, but.
Well, you'll get back to it. Alex, who nudged you?
Really, Cosmos was hugely influential for me. I actually studied theater, but shortly after I graduated, I was kind of falling out of it. I didn't really feel like I wanted to make it a career anymore, and was sort of feeling adrift, and it was around that time that a friend of mine introduced me to Cosmos. I came to it late in life. It came out in 1980 or so, but I didn't discover it until much later. Really made a huge impact on me. I started reading science voraciously. I started writing a science blog called Sagan's Brain. I named it after Carl Sagan. And then after that, you know, I decided what I really wanted to do was teach science, teach physics. Carl Sagan was such a great scientist, but also a great teacher, a great popularizer of science.
What age were you when you decided that?
I mean, I'd always grown up. My mom was a science teacher. a long time ago and had brought me up with an appreciation for science. But this was probably, I was probably 22 when this happened. So late in life.
Post-college,
yeah.
And Sagan just on TV encourages you, empowers you to say, you know, I can go back and completely transform my life.
Totally. And
so you're sitting around watching old DVDs.
Yeah, exactly. Pop
like
it in.
The weekend to kill.
Right.
All right. So, Seth, did you get a Sagan nudge anywhere along the line?
Yeah. So I also discovered Cosmos kind of late in life. I was a graduate student. This was before YouTube and before Netflix, and I was TAing, and I found it in a closet and
I love
watched
that.
The first
Cosmos bootlegs. You're watching Cosmos bootlegs.
And I consumed it in one weekend. I just watched the first episode, was totally hooked, and just watched the whole thing.
Emily, how about you?
I actually brought with me today a VHS tape of the 5th and 6th episodes of the Cosmos series that I bought in college, used for, I believe, $2, and have been carting around with me for 15 years. So I was aware of Carl Sagan, definitely, as an undergrad when I was starting to study physics and astronomy. And since then, it's just kind of been in the background a little bit. Like, I haven't been really, really hugely aware of it, part of which is because when you want to pursue a career in science, it's kind of like publish or perish in academia. And so you're told, you know, focus on the research. Some people are explicitly told if you don't want a career in research, you know, you shouldn't even start grad school or anything like that, which I think is a terrible thing. And so I, like, even though I had this interest in education and in communication of science to the public and things like that, it was kind of, you know, I kind of had to keep it in the background for several years. But now that I have a faculty position, I can kind of let it out a little bit more. And so it's nice to be kind of still continuously inspired by Carl Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson and, you know, these people that everybody knows their names now, which is fantastic. For people to have scientists as popular figures on TV, you know, on YouTube, on the internet, it's really fantastic to have rock star scientists.
Well, entertainment is one thing, and, you know, acquiring knowledge is great, but it sounds like from all three of you that on some level, in the midst of the distractions of success and what's my next track and choosing my major and all that, you need permission to really enter into the place where you can ask the big questions. How does the universe work? What are we here for? How do you get yourself to sit in the Sagan chair or the Plato chair to ask the big questions about, what is the cosmos?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think I've always looked at, and certainly when I was growing up, you know, math was hard. I mean, math is hard. It's hard for a lot of people. Now, yeah, Emily's shaking her head. It's doable. But that was a sort of a shift that I had to make in my mind. I kind of looked at myself being like, oh, you're not smart enough to do that. Yeah. And that's not true. You know, you can do this sort of stuff. If you devote yourself, it's not unachievable. And
even a theater major.
Exactly. Even. Yeah. Someone like me, you know. It's not out of reach. And I think there's this myth that it's really just for these elite minds, that there are very few of us out there. And that's just not the case.
Seth, the big questions?
Yeah, I think asking the big questions is a deeply human desire. I think we have this insatiable desire to consider these big questions. Where are we from? How did this begin? And to place ourselves in some sort of cosmic context. And we do it in many different ways, right? We express it in our art, our philosophy, religion. And so I think everybody asks these questions. Everybody sits down, thinks about them. And I think that's why the Cosmos series was so powerful, right? It presented a scientific view of phenomenon that's occurring in our world and in our universe. But at the same time, it really connected us with this deep human experience and desire to put ourselves in some broader context.
Well, Alex, Seth, and Emily, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Dr. Sagan would be proud.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.